comes the sun. It's a little bit after 4 o'clock here on Katie and Kay, and you are tuned to Everything Under the Sun, a little half-hour news segment that we do here with the staff of the Soper Sun, and usually with some other folks, but not today. We had a firefighter set up to come and join us, and they are responding to a fire, I think I heard, up Cattle Creek. Is that what you're... You're here in here, Megan?
I heard near Finbar, but whatever that means.
Okay. So, obviously, we would rather they were up there fighting fires than talking with us on the radio, even if it means that you're just going to be hearing from Megan and I today. Although, as ever, this is a call-in show, 963-2976. Love to have somebody call in. Doesn't seem to happen very often, but if there's anything in the paper in the last few weeks that you'd like to respond to, or something not in the paper you think should have been in the paper, give us a call, 963-2976, and we'll chat with you on the air. As far as the big news goes, I think we were kind of a fire-centric issue this week.
I think we were, yeah, and I think fairly so.
Well, you know, and that was our plan, interestingly, even before the 4 Mile fire got going. You know, we talked about the fireworks thing. We'll let you in on a secret of how we come up with what the community is talking about. We pay attention to that Carbondale Citizens Google group and to the Roaring Fork Swap Facebook page, and if people are interested, even if we feel like it's got a fairly straightforward answer, we know that it's worth talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. And that proved true this week as well. And I think aptly so, right? We had been talking about, wait a minute, why? Well, we hadn't been talking about the Roaring Fork Swap, had been talking about that fireworks stand.
Well, actually, no, we did too, because that's, I remember, true. we went caving up on the flat tops, saw the Walcott fire plume, and on the way back, that's the day that they'd set up the stand with all those flags, and you were going, wait, can they do that?
That's true. I had forgotten about that.
And the answer is yes, they absolutely can do that, and only once have the commissioners actually taken the step to ban sale of fireworks as well as use of fireworks.
They did.
And they ended up backpedaling.
Yes, exactly. Specifically because Ray Cordova, the gentleman behind that fireworks stand, came and made a plea to the commissioner saying, listen, he basically had a couple of arguments, but his main argument was, this is the way I make a living. And if you take that away, then I'm unable to do so during this time period. And he was trying to make the assertion that just because, yes, he sets up shop before Independence Day, that's not necessarily when everybody who comes and purchases is intending on using them, right? So he was saying, yeah, but you've also got birthday parties and things later in the fall, and they're just taking advantage of the timeliness of having access to sales. It's not that they're intending on setting them off. And that was a compelling plea to the commissioners, basically.
Uh-huh. Well, and you know, Rob Goodwin, the fire chief, sort of response to that was, you buy fireworks with the intent of setting them off.
Yeah.
That said, I hear a lot of fireworks around New Year's and a lot of fireworks around the Super Bowl. So those folks must get them at some point. And I don't know where I would get my fireworks if I was looking for them, you know, in February.
Right. Yeah, it's not exactly peak fireworks sale season in February.
No, not particularly. You know, there's a benefit of the doubt there. And that gentleman, by the way, we did reach out to for a comment and were not received.
No, he very politely and curtly declined to comment, just simply saying that he'd been there for years, and that's well within his right.
Absolutely.
We did reach out to a fireworks stand in Rock Springs, Wyoming, however, actually at your suggestion, and I was able to get kind of, it was a very chaotic phone call.
Were a little busy.
Yeah, there were customers, there was a dog barking, so I never actually caught the gentleman's name, but, you know, he said, yeah, I can confirm that we do get, you know, plenty of customers from Colorado who, by the way, are probably not like always, but sometimes purchasing fireworks that are always illegal in Colorado,
which
but not in Wyoming.
Basically anything that leaves the ground.
Anything that leaves the ground and goes boom is going to be illegal in Colorado.
And also, to my understanding, any firework at all is also always illegal in national forest land. That public land, you're really not supposed to be.
Now I feel like I underreported. That's news to me, but it makes sense.
I should probably mention that. But the press releases that the Garfield County Sheriff's Office has been putting out respective to their bans, their current 100%, you are not allowed to do fireworks in unincorporated Garfield County, or pretty much incorporated at this point.
Right.
The fireworks ban has mentioned, hey, you know, it's always, you never were able to do this in the national forest. So I don't know how many people are aware of that, or if somebody wants to call and tell me I'm wrong on that, feel free. But I do think it's pretty fair to say that most people would agree at this point, you really shouldn't be, you know, playing with fire in any uncontrolled capacity at this point.
Yeah, that's I liked Rob Goodwin's way of saying it's just a matter of common sense, you know. And when you start to talk, it's wonderful to talk to the layman like you and me, who are like, yeah, no, it's not fun when the state is on fire. But talking to, you know, even one of the citizens who did respond to my plea on the swap about, hey, if you've got an opinion on this, I'd like to hear an quote-unquote unofficial statement on it, you know, it turns out that, well, the guy who ended up calling me was a retired firefighter who had also been in the fire in 2013. And when you talk to Rob, who's been here for decades, and he remembers that terrible fire in 1994 that, you know, 14 of his colleagues died in that, you know, so, yeah. And as he rightfully pointed out, nobody wants to be the cause of that. Half the time, I was always curious, like, how do they deduce what the start of a fire was, right? Like, how can you figure out? I was in the Front Range in 2012 during those terrible fires. And at one point in the Boulder Canyon fire, they had decided that it was a cigarette butt that had been flicked out of a car. How can you possibly determine that? And Rob told me, he's like, well, a lot of the times you can tell because the human that was responsible for the human activity is still there desperately trying to control it. So nobody wants to be the reason for a tragedy.
True. Right? Yeah. And we'll remains to be seen what the 4 mile fire cause was, or the one, whatever's going on right now.
Right.
You know, we can't control lightning. We can't control everything, but we can control our own activity, and we can avoid being the person in that circumstance, wishing we had done something different.
Right.
Also, you used the phrase retired firefighter, and that, of course, brought up Jim Hawkins for me.
I was just going to ask about him.
Is he really retired if he's still, I mean, I guess he's not getting paid to fight fire at this point, but, you know, so Friday night comes along, and I'm having dinner, and I get a text from a board member that there's a big plume of smoke visible from Dry Park, and I go running up to 4 Mile, where, of course, the PI, the Post Independent, has much more boots on the ground than I do in terms of covering this.
You mean they have more than two, like individual boot per foot?
Yep. Yeah. But I had Megan Tackett here, you know, on the home front, keeping track of what I was sending her and trying to post updates, and we tried to do kind of a breaking news thing, and you know, it's a service we can provide that a weekly typically couldn't, thanks to the internet. But our role is a little bit more after the fact, find the story within the story, or the backstory, or what have you. And, I thought of, okay, we could go up here and catch up with these firefighters when they're doing the mop up, which is cool. You know, it's something you don't often see because there's a lot of hard work after all the drama is done. But, under the circumstances, and maybe just because I was tired from spending up there all Friday night, and also because I don't want to bug those guys, you know, they're doing hard work, and I'm glad they're there, and I'm trying to get information out to the general populace without undermining their efforts to help folks. We went with kind of a more featurey approach and talked to Jim Hawkins, who was one of the people I was trying to get a hold of up there anyway. He's a retired firefighter from Denver Fire who never really gave it up, got himself a fire engine from the 60s, and keeps it up there at the 4 Mile Bed and Breakfast, which he runs with his wife, Cheryl. And, you know, when there's a plume of smoke near 4 Mile, he sees it, he's often off fighting it.
I love that he keeps that thing functional. If I had a cute little bear, like Airbnb or B&B like that, I'd be like, oh, look at my cutesy vintage, you know, fire truck. That's part of the aesthetic. No, I love that he's like, no, I'm going to make sure that I can use this.
He wants it to shoot water. Yeah, that's what he says. And it runs in parades, and it does an excellent job of amusing the folks who come to visit 4 Mile Creek B&B. But also, it's an action machine. And Jim, who is not, I tried to get to come in and chat with us, but is said, oh, let the people who are still doing it talk. And well, now they're off doing their own thing. Jim is a very humble person, but he's also a person who tends to do things that warrant news, as is Cheryl, for that matter. They're very involved folks in the community. And, you know, Jim, I guess it was about 2 years ago, there was this bear that was wandering around, and it had gotten its head stuck in a plastic jug for cheese balls. And
sounds like something my dog would do.
Yeah, bears. There's some comparisons worth making there. anyway, and so it would come around, and it was clearly in distress, and they would call the Parks and Wildlife, and Parks and Wildlife would come up, and the bear would be gone. So Jim's solution to this was to lasso the bear. Which resulted in him kind of wrestling the bear, but successfully getting the cheese. I mean, the cheese ball ended up off, and the bear is probably off causing trouble somewhere in the wilderness or at your local Walmart where he can find more of the same. It's not out of character, is what I'm saying here. But you know, we liked it. We liked folks like that. We like to catch up with people in the valley who are up to interesting things, and I hope that's a good indicator of what you end up seeing in the paper.
Yeah.
The other thing that we got off of Roaring Fork Swap this week was a conversation about Prince Creek, and camping along there. And once we started looking into it, so folks were saying, hey, I went up Prince Creek to go camping, or I sent some friends up Prince Creek to go camping, and they're not letting anybody in, and they're cutting down all the undergrowth and bulldozing things. And we went, okay. And come to find out, that's been the plan for some time. It's only just being implemented. And you got to see sort of what's going on up there. Was it what you expected?
You know, I didn't really go up with much expectations, I guess. When I got up there, it made sense, but it was definitely the first time I had personally, anyway, not being a Colorado native, I guess, seeing true, like, construction equipment and, you know, catching photographs of the dirt getting dumped into the trucks and things being cleared. And it was not our first attempt at even getting up there. I remember we tried the first time, and it was, of course, on deadline, and we were trying to figure out a shot, and there was enough construction crew managing even the flow of traffic on the road that we were like, oh, we don't have time for this. So it was you decided that we were going to do this, and it was worth it.
It's a process up there. And, you know, I think basically, for folks who haven't read our story yet, going to be two campgrounds, more formal, with your picnic tables and your
restrooms
and your trash receptacles. And you're not going to be allowed to camp outside of those areas along Prince Creek. You want to go back up farther up the Crown or closer to Dinkle Lake. Some of those options are going to remain, especially as you get into National Forest instead of BLM land. Which may be redundant, but maybe not. But right down there, it's going to be really kind of formal, what you're used to if you go up Avalanche or elsewhere. And it's eventually going to be paid, not for, it sounds like, at least a year. You're gonna have to pay to be up Prince Creek, which some folks are going to get grumpy about. That's been a really popular spot for just a quick, hey, I want to be out of the way for an evening, or for folks who want to be someplace, you know, don't want to pay rent,
right.
Which I can't blame them, over the summer and live out of it for however long at a time. Already rules in place that prohibit being up there for more than a week at a time in the summer, or 2 weeks, and pretty much anywhere. I mean, most places on BLM and Forest Service want you to move every 2 weeks and not come back within 30 days. So,
yeah, this kind of, it's always interesting because you can totally see both sides of that. On the one hand, I don't want to pay to go to Prince Creek. I love Prince Creek. It's part of my backyard. On the other hand, it also kind of becomes almost like the conundrum, right? Of, well, maybe this regulation is necessary if we're going to preserve for longer this thing that we all know and love. So I can see both sides of that.
Yeah, no, I and again, call-in show. So you have an opinion about camping up Prince Creek, 963-2976. Love to hear from you. But I'm a person who kind of avoids the developed campgrounds as a secondary, you know, glamping situation.
Really? I would never have guessed that.
Right. Shocking. I know it is. But I love it, not just not paying for it, but not not being glumped in with a bunch of other people and having a little space. And I'm okay not having a pit toilet or a picnic table. Right now I don't even need a rock ring because we're not able to do that, even that. So although technically under stage one you are allowed to have fires in developed campgrounds, so there's a perk to having some developed campgrounds around, and that's a perk that you're actually losing on other fronts. The up on the flat tops, some of the developed campgrounds up there are being decommissioned. Gee, I wonder if that has anything to do with how much money the Forest Service is receiving these days. It's going both ways. There's more distributed, dispersed camping in some places and less in others. And there's people yelling in the next room. I don't know. I mean, what's your camping MO there, Megan?
Oh, my camping MO in my earlier 20s days, I was very happy to do 70-mile multi-day stretches on the Appalachian Trail and really pitch a tent and rack up my stories. These days, I'm like, but the family I'm marrying into has this amazing cabin that they built over the course of 13 summers up in like ATV access or foot traffic only fields and marble, and I love having a mattress, and I'm really spoiled in my early 30s, so I love the idea of camping, but these days I definitely have a kind of home away from home that I find myself coming back to in very creature comfort status.
I'm gonna sympathize with that. I used to be a purist, and I think in some ways I still am, because the more stuff you bring with you, the more work there is kind of to do to make camping happen. You just lay out a sleeping bag and a tarp, and clean up in the morning is a real cinch. But the creature comforts have their benefits too. It's all a matter of, are you up there for the camping experience? Are you up there for the social experience? Are you up there to watch the sunset and sunrise? Or are you hoping to do something the next morning and actually want not to be stiff and sore when that comes? So,
and I'm definitely a little column B and C these days. I don't necessarily, I feel like I've got the camping experience. It's great. I've got nothing against it. But yeah, I'm there for the social aspect and the sunrise.
Mm-hmm. So there, you make it for the sunrise?
I do usually, actually. When I'm camping, right, like there's something about that natural light that I'll actually wake up. Thursday morning editorial meetings, that's a different story.
We didn't need to advertise that to the public. I wasn't going to go there. It's a small paper this week, 16 pages, and that's all good and well. We're not always going to complain when it wasn't the newsiest of weeks. I didn't feel like anyway we were putting things off that folks really needed to know.
Yeah, and I think we've got a really great support system with our freelancers right now. And I also really enjoy that we can say 16 pages is a smaller paper, because at least a year ago when I really started on staff, that was more the norm. So kudos, thank you to the community for allowing us to say 16 is kind of a smaller paper. I feel like we're growing.
That's a good feeling. I totally agree. And 3 years ago, there were occasional 12s in there, and the board and my predecessor sort of made this commitment that 16 was going to be the minimum. That was, you know, no matter how few ads we had that week, there was going to be 16 pages of news. And I have certainly never felt like, boy, there's not enough going on to fill that space. So that's all beneficial. And, you know, there's the Board of Trustees meeting, right? I sat in on that this week and probably could have written three stories out of that if there was absolutely nothing else going on. And you would know everything there is to know about the hydro plant proposal up at Nettle Creek, which, you know, they're talking turbo versus not. They're talking how old is this pipe. There's lots of details in there that maybe folks want to know. But I thought perhaps in this case that the Thompson Park proposal and the decision to kind of approve that in a circumstance that didn't necessarily look like it was going to be favorable for the developers, with three trustees gone and the sort of more skeptical members still present, that was an interesting one. It was it's always interesting to sit in on the Board of Trustees meeting, and I say that only partially facetiously. You know, when they're playing hardball with somebody who is really looking after their own bottom line, who has thousands of dollars already invested in something and is trying to still turn a profit at the end, and they're looking for this higher density, and they're looking for, you know, all of these are going to be $800,000, so they're all affordable, which, you know, that's a whole nother debate. And the town is pushing for, we want this many at this rate of affordable housing. It was an interesting thing to watch, because as Marty Silverstein pointed out, nobody really got 100% of what they want. The town got one more 100% AMI unit, which means one more slightly more affordable unit for somebody who qualifies, a slightly higher RITA, which is just kind of a tax that they're going to take in that's going toward any future projects of affordable housing that the town might try to attempt to do. And right now they're not spending any of that. They kind of don't have enough built up. But the way it's been explained to me, if they had $500,000 in the bank, sort of earmarked for that purpose, and the economy crashed and there was a project half done, they could maybe purchase the project and finish it and have that be Carbondale affordable housing. Or, you know, it's about taking advantage of opportunities. It's not necessarily about trying to subsidize something at this point. It's you're really going to want to seize the moment with a big chunk of change, not fritter it away one bit at a time. So,
well, and I think it's really important. I, for one, really appreciate that you go to those Board of Trustees meetings, because, you know, so many of the things that you hear about we didn't have the page count for now, later on, those are going to be stories. Later on, once, you know, dirt is broken on these projects and people are suddenly upset at the way they've manifested and, well, who was in the room? Who made these decisions? You know, if you follow your Board of Trustee meetings, you get to see that evolution and maybe be a little bit more cognizant of when there are public hearings and get to participate at the mm-hmm. local level at where it really matters to your day-to-day. So I, for one, appreciate you.
And the flip side is, if you do follow all those things, and somebody comes up 6 months later complaining about, I didn't know about this, it can be frustrating. You know, it was frustrating for me to some extent when the bead controversy came back up, because we'd publicized it, not deeply.
You're talking about the plastic beads.
The plastic beads in the Crystal
water.
River that, mm-hmm. that you know, I'm sure landowners up who have ditches along the Crystal in that neck of the woods went, well, yeah, of course there were beads. They saw it, you know, back in August. And then the high water, such as it was, kind of scoured up the banks, brought some up, and more use was going on, right? I have to acknowledge, you know, there aren't a lot of people on the river in September to encounter those beads. There are a lot more in May to wonder what the heck's going on here. And so it kind of brought this back up. The perk for the town was that they had already addressed it. They'd capped it off, you know, put in a new valve, tried to do a cleanup, and they sort of had an answer waiting for people who were concerned about this. That's certainly a benefit, but it's more frustrating when something's a public process. It's had a hearing, and, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, the whole south side of the 100 block of Main Street got rezoned from commercial transitional to, you know, historic commercial core, which basically allows lot line to lot line construction, slightly higher, you know, different envelopes. It's a denser zoning. And nobody showed up at those meetings, not neighbors, nothing. And I'm covering these going, okay, I guess nobody minds. Until 6 months later, when Marble Distilling was being built, people are wondering how is this big building allowed on a block that's otherwise pretty small? Well, that decision had already been made, that the folks who were doing it had gone through the proper process. And so I really do encourage folks to stay up, even if it's, you know, I'm not saying go to every darn meeting. That's why you have me or whoever's filling in for me in the back of those meetings.
You, they have you, Will. No,
yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Or, you know, or the Post-Independent or, you know, or just reading through Jay's report that we publish every week. There's a lot of detail in there. And I know that some people are paying attention to it because, for instance, the Red Hill Lofts thing first got mentioned in the town report, and I got so many questions about it. Do you have more information? What, you know, why wasn't this a full story? Well, we didn't have the info for a full story. We wanted to get it out there. So you can kind of be at the cutting edge, such as it is, given that that report comes in on Friday and we publish it on Thursday, a week, you know, 6 days later. But you can be pretty in the loop just by skimming through the town report and keeping track of our BOT coverage. And I know it's dry, but I think it's an important part of what we do.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of important part of what we do, real quickly before we get into some of our underwriting messages, turning it a little dark, and I don't mean it in a preachy way, but my heart is breaking. I have heard so many stories, four by my count this week alone, because it is so hot outside. And
this is going to be a dog thing.
It's a dog thing. I there are a lot of broken hearts right now in this valley, mm-hmm. from dogs suffering heat stroke, mm-hmm. Doing what it would be an everyday good pet parent activity, taking that dog for the run, taking that dog out to do what it loves to do. Heat stroke is a very real thing, and there have been people who have had to say goodbye to their four-legged companions because of the temperatures. And I mean, even my own guy hurt his paw because the grass was so dry, it cut the webbing on his paw. Mm. So just be so, so, so careful and vigilant. And if they're mad at you for keeping them cooped up, just remind them, you know, it's for their own good. And I'm devastated today, and I just had to say that so that
we can curtail that. Because, you know, we had a fill-in proofreader who couldn't come in. We just at the Soper Sun encountered a couple people who were in that situation. And so obviously, you know, be conscious of your pet's needs, even if they're not conscious of their needs.
Yeah, it's not obvious. They want to run with you.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, that's just about all the time we have. I should let you know this is Kitty and Kay, commercial-free since 1983. Underwriting on Kitty and Kay is an effective way to market your business, reach your friends and neighbors in the Roaring Fork Valley and beyond with Kitty and Kay's reasonable underwriting packages. Email Greg at kittyandkay.org. You've been listening to Everything Under the Sun with Will and Megan of the Soper Sun. Anything else you want to add? I mean, we can do our music, but we're going right into Valley Voices at 4:30, so as long as we're prompt there.
I mean, I feel like we can't leave it on that note, right? It's a beautiful day, and Carbondale's wonderful, and we're gearing up for 4th of July and First Friday, and there's so much happening.
Oh, yeah. We probably should have mentioned that because it'll be after the 4th of July. 10 a.m. on the 4th, Independence Day.
Yes.
There are people who will call me out if I call the holiday the 4th of July. But you got your parade coming right outside the Second Street Studios here at KD&K, lining up, and then a bunch of kids on Main Street, and then ice cream and watermelon in the park, and a pool party. So mark your calendars especially if you've got kids. There's a lot of programming right here in Carbondale. Also, Redstone has a parade, and Aspen has invited veterans to march in theirs as well. So there's lots of options, just not fireworks. Just that's, we'll bring it full circle that way. Please do not light the forest on fire. We realize the forest might light on fire anyway, but we very much appreciate it if we don't have anyone to blame.
Exactly. And on that note, have a wonderful rest of your afternoon, guys.
Thanks for listening.